why don't kick back and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beefs,
spazzles,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are having a wonderful week so far. So we are now in the month of March, and you know that means it is Women's History Month. So shout out to all of my women out there in the struggle, doing amazing things, killing it in the game, being trailblazers, all of that. Even though we are women 365 days a year and we should be celebrated as such, it is great to have a month where we're able to showcase to the world all of the positive achievements and accomplishments of women all over the world. So definitely shout out to all my women out there. So today we have a very special show for you. I have a very special guest who goes by the name of Viva La Burns. He is a recording artist here from Brooklyn, New York. And he is also the founder of Haitian Game Night. So you definitely want to keep it locked to hear more about Viva La Burns, what he's been up to, what is this Haitian Game Night, and also and whatever other crazy banter, you know, that I tend to get into. So you definitely want to keep it locked for that. So before I go into the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week, I just have a really quick rant for New York City government. I don't know who's making these calls about the snow cancellations, the school cancellations, but you guys need to go back to the drawing board. I don't know if it's you, Mr. de Blasio. I don't know if it's your team. I don't know. De Blasio and et al. And co. Whatever. We need to stop shutting down schools for 3 to 6 inches of snow. This is ridiculous. I got the notice late on Sunday night that schools were going to be closed the next morning. Okay. Like less than 12 hours later, school was going to be closed. For those of us who are parents or guardians of young children, it is not fair. Like as a parent, I feel like New York City should be trying it. Like even with these half days, like who is able to follow these schedules? Like I had to bring my son to school. I mean, not to school, but to work. Yesterday. Why? Because where was I going to? First of all, I don't have money to get a babysitter for the day, $200 to $300 for the day, right? And on top of that, let's say you do have relatives that you could possibly drop your kid off to. It's less than 12 hours notice. You know what I'm saying? Like these things need to be planned. 3 to 6 inches of snow. I was expecting, when I heard the cancellation, I was expecting a tundra, a winter storm, that I was going to be climbing over snow piles just to get to work. Like, that's what I was expecting. Although I should know better because this is how New York City does. New York City's become very, very soft. I don't understand what's going on. But when I walked out of the house, there was, I mean, the pave or whatever, the sidewalk was clear. It was clear. The snow was neatly pushed to the side. Like I was expecting at least some crazy black ice, like nothing. The sun was out here bright and shiny, melting the snow on the side. Like it was crazy. And my thing is like 3 to 6 inches, even if that was the case, because first of all, I didn't see 3 to 6 inches in my Brooklyn streets. Even if there was 3 to 6 inches of snow, you're trying to tell me that the children can't walk on 3 to 6 inches of snow to school? I mean, seriously. So again, I don't know who comes up with these things, but you guys need to go back to the drawing board, get back in the lab and figure out what the proper procedures are, what measures, like what is the measure? Are we going to do 10 to 12 inches, 12 to 24? Like what is the measure? Because 3 to 6 inches is not it. And you're really inconveniencing parents and guardians who have children who rely on the schedules. Right? I know that my child is going to school from the hours of 8 to 5 or whatever it is, you know, because he has after school. Like these schedules are necessary when you are parenting children. So you guys need to be more sensitive to the parents and guardians of these kids. I know the New York City teachers are happy. They're excited when they don't have to deal with these unruly children. I feel you. I get you. I'm a parent of a 12-year-old child. But I'm just saying though, it can't be like this. Like this is not it. Either way, that was my rant. So, this week's Urban Dictionary. It is now time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, you lit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary phrase of the week is trophy minority. So a trophy minority is typically a white person's one black friend who they are so proud to know and tend to mention as though they won some kind of prize. Example, we hung out for a while before I realized I was just a trophy minority. I'm assuming that individual is a black person, or I guess, I don't know, person of color. I found this to be interesting because I feel like it's on the heels of that congressional hearing that took place with Michael Cohen last week, where I know this image was like all over social media of that one black woman who was standing in the midst of all these Republican congressmen during that congressional hearing. And there were just so many memes like about it. It was crazy hilarious. But like, the, you know, tokenism, right? That token black person. You want to show that you're down, that you're showing, you know, you have diversity. You throw in the black person. And it's not even just any black person. You throw in a black woman because that checks off 2 points on the diversity. And if she is from the LGBTQ community, you check off 3 points. So black women, women of color are usually, you know, part of that rainbow coalition whenever they're trying to, like, you know, show that they have some sort of diversity. But I thought that was very interesting. But at the end of the day, this phrase trophy minority does speak a lot of truth, because I feel like all of us from the black and brown community at some point, especially those of us from the black community, have been trophy minorities at least on one occasion or not. Because especially when we're talking about corporate settings and corporate boards or whatever, there's not many black people. Sometimes there are no black people at all and you're like the only one. And so that's where, you know, these individuals, these white people want to sit here and say, oh, you know, I have that one black friend of mine, or I have a black friend. Because by having you as their trophy minority, it's like it validates them and it proves to the world, I can't be racist because I have that one black friend. Look at me and, you know, Mr. Jenkins, I think that's his last name. And look at us in this picture, because they never really know our last names, right? They never really know anything about us. We're their best friends, but they know nothing about us, right? Either way, that is the word or phrase of the week. So it is now time for my favorite segment of this show, the big up of the week.
Watch it. And you feel big up, big up. All of the woman, them big up, big up. All of the girl, them big up, big up.
So this week's big up goes to Marseille Martin. Hopefully I'm saying her name right. She is the star, or one of the stars, of ABC's hit TV show Blackish. She plays the role of Diane. So Marseille is 14 years old and she is set to become the youngest executive producer in history. Now, for Women's History Month, you know, I want to try to mix things up a little bit. I feel like whenever we talk about women's history and we're giving the accolades and talking about the accomplishments, we're referring to the old heads like Sojourner Truth, Ida B. Wells, Harriet Tubman, or some of these older women in Hollywood. But we rarely highlight the youngsters. And it's really, really important that we do so, because these young kids are out here killing it in the game, and it's necessary to show love and support for them. So this week, I wanted to highlight Marseille because she, at the age of 14, is killing it in the game. She is producing movies with A-listers, and she even has her own production agency called Genius at the age of 14. And so her movie Little, I think it's set to come out in April, but she is producing like major Hollywood films at the age of 14. So I wanted to highlight her and to big her up, because I think it's necessary, you know, to highlight the children. It's not always about the old heads. And she's out here inspiring not just young girls, young women, but she's inspiring the older generation too. Because I mean, if she can do it at 14, like, what can't I do then, you know? So definitely big up to her. So now you guys know, with every high, there is a low. And this week's low is part of that collection of white women calling the police on black people and complaining about black presence. So out here in Massachusetts, once again, I feel like half these things are taking place in Massachusetts. But either way, this woman goes by, or the internet has called her Dog Park Debbie. So Dog Park Debbie basically called the cops on Franklin Baxley while they were both in a dog park. Why, you may wonder? Because Baxley's dog humped her dog. And she felt that this was such an egregious offense that it warranted emergency 911 services. So she called 911 and the police actually showed up to this mess. And the great thing about social media and the great thing about being able to record interactions now is that Franklin recorded the whole incident. And she's basically talking about where you know, your dog humped my dog, and that's against the rules of the park, that's against the law, or whatever the case is. And she felt that that was enough to call the police and waste resources. Meanwhile, homicides are taking place, rapes are occurring, kids are being kidnapped, but this is what she wanted to use the 911 services for. And so the police arrived. And what was very interesting was that, so the woman complained to the police officer that Baxley was verbally assaulting her and that her, you know, his dog was humping her dog. And the police arrive, and he actually, the police officer tries to like G-check Franklin on some like, listen, well, you can't be doing that. You can't do that. You know, it could be interpreted as assault, like if you're talking to her in her face. And Franklin's like, I was standing right next to her and I'm talking to her in the tone that I was talking to you, right? Craziness, craziness, craziness. So this is exactly why people have no respect for police officers as well, too. And this is why people are calling the officers pigs and all sorts of stuff. Because of this right here. Like, how are you, Officer so-and-so, engaging with her in a way where you're reaffirming her actions and trying to G-check Franklin on, like, you know, and trying to give him like the breakdown of the elements of like assault? Like, it's crazy to me. So either way, Dog Park Debbie, I mean, this is just, again, it's just another collection, another addition to the collection of white women calling the cops. But it's just very interesting here. You know, once again, the police officers, the authorities, I mean, what you needed to do, Officer so-and-so, was take the report and move along your way. But you now basically trying to make it seem like Franklin did something wrong by actually addressing her. You're reaffirming this white privilege that this woman clearly felt like she had to be able to call you and tell you to come down for some stupidness. So Dog Park Debbie, you are the womp womp of the week. All right, everyone. I am here with my very special guest, Viva LaBurns. Viva.
Yes, yes, yes. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for inviting me.
Of course, of course. So just to give some background as to, I guess, how this connection happened, and then we'll get into the real story, I guess, later.
Okay.
So for those of you, or I guess, are interested in how, you know, who this guy is, why is he on my show? So I went to a Haitian game night a couple of months ago, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And I had seen a lot of the posts on social media, and I was like, what is this Haitian game night? I'm kind of intrigued. I don't really want to leave my bed, but I want to know what this is about.
Okay.
And that's how I met you, because you were there. You're the organizer.
Yes, I'm the host of Haitian Game Night at Laku Cafe. It's a monthly game night where we introduce people that are not familiar with the Haitian culture to it, and also Haitian American people to come network, and we're all just networking young adults in different professions, different fields. And it's just it's a really a fun night with food, drinks, games. Like, you can't go wrong at.
Okay. So I want to get into that, but first tell us who you are.
Okay. My name is Viva LaBurns. I am a recording artist from Brooklyn, New York. My background is Haitian. Aiti Saka Fet. We in the building.
Blup, blup.
Nula. So, yeah, that's my background. I went I graduated from City College of New York in Harlem.
Okay.
So that really changed my life, going to Harlem, because I'm a Brooklyn guy. So
Harlem is too far out. It's another world out there. Yeah. Even the crackheads are different.
Yo, I went to the east side of Harlem one time, because my school is on the west side. Like on 135th up the hill.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really nice area, mixed area. And then, you know, as we got older, we were expanding, going to different places. And then I think someone had a house party on 125th and Lenox. And I'm like, all right, like, I heard about the east side, but I've never, like, I know a lot of rappers are from there. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Dipset, this, that. And I'm like, okay, I've heard about this east side. But I'm like, all right, I got off the train. I'm telling you, I broke the world record for crackheads asking me for money.
Oh gosh, how many? How many asked you?
Okay, off the train was three in one under 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I got to the apartment building, mm-hmm. probably was six.
Oh my gosh.
It was like shh.
That makes sense. Yeah, every time I go to Harlem, I can say that I encounter at least mm-hmm. 3 to 5 crackheads.
Yeah,
at least.
Yeah. Also, like me knowing the history, the East Side has more poverty.
Okay.
And is at least the around one the high 120s, the low 130s. Right under 145th from when I was in school there, where they're not really gentrifying that side from what I know. It could change by 2019.
Probably.
So,
it's going to change.
So that was like the concentration of poverty in Harlem on that side. So it was just like, if you're there, it's like, you got to move fast.
But I mean, but I feel like that's probably where the most fun is to be had, though. That's where you're going to get the nutcrackers.
No. In my experience, the most fun in my, every Harlem is a big neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
My experience, the most fun was on the west side.
Okay.
Like north of Columbia, right where City College was, mm-hmm. and 145th, like with the Dominicans.
Okay.
So right, like, south of, oh, now I forgot the name of the neighborhood.
Washington Heights.
Yeah, south okay. of Washington Heights. Yes, that's one of my favorites. Shout out to the Maduros. Oh, nice. When you want a good bun? Oh, man.
That's where you go.
You're not in Brooklyn, you got to go uptown. So then, so that side, honestly, was real fun because, like, a lot of us college students, we had apartments.
Mm-hmm.
So, they just opened up a dorm when I first started school there. So it was, and you know, they had like, they were started opening up more restaurants.
Okay.
So it was more fun. It was a mixture of switching from delis to, okay, let's switch to happy hour.
Okay. All right. So you went to City College. What did you major in?
I graduated in advertising, public relation, and journalism.
Okay, cool. So you do writing and stuff? And
yes. I was doing, just me personally, mm-hmm. I was into sports.
Okay.
And I used to watch ESPN, like when I went to college, we first got cable. And like, oh, okay. My mother didn't want to get cable.
Yeah, that's a Haitian story.
Yeah, it's just like she didn't want me to grow up as a bacabo.
Yep.
So I'm just like, it's just TV. Like,
yeah, so that's how I got into sports as well, too, because my mother cut the cable at an early age. So I was mm-hmm. watching golf, tennis, everything on Sundays.
Oh, man. That's how I became a Mets fan. They were the only thing on Channel 11. It was either that or watch The Godfather 3 times. Like, so then, but I was just like, when I was on watching TV, I was just sick. There was this show called, they still exist now, it's First Take, with like this guy named Skip Bayless and these other guys. And their take about basketball was just so off.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I wish I had the power. And this is like 2009. And it's just like, Twitter was there, but it wasn't as powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So it was more of a blogging atmosphere.
Okay.
So I was just like, I'm so sick of these guys. So I started a sports blog and then told my friends about it. But me, writing the passion to write about sports and just get my opinions out,
mm-hmm.
I learned more about writing.
Okay.
Because I wasn't the best writer. And then also I learned about coding as well. Because, you know, whether it's MySpace or I use Blogger, where you have to, you know, update your sites and add widgets. And mm-hmm. then my bank account, I didn't even have a bank account at that time. I only had like $5 to my name. So I was like, okay, what can I do with $5? I got like business cards off Vistaprint or mm-hmm. something
Shout
like that.
Shout out to Vistaprint.
It was free.
My first ones were from there too.
It was, at that time, it was free. All you had to pay was for shipping. I was like, I got $5 to my name and I got the internet. So I was like, I'm going to learn that I have no money, so I can't hire anybody,
mm-hmm.
but I could take the time and read articles and learn. So basically everything I'm doing is just like, I think about it, I'll take the time to learn it or resource, like find people with like in the same level, same mm-hmm. interest, and we'll go.
Okay. All right. So I am interested in two things
okay.
you stated. Viva La Burns. Okay. Where did you get that name? How did it come up?
Okay. The name Viva La Burns, I gave it to myself in high school. So in high school, we had French class, and I come into class first period, you know, chilling, you know, this is like the 2000s. So, you know, I went to Catholic school.
Okay.
So then it's like, you got the wave spinning in Brooklyn was a must at the time. Like in 2005, 2006, you needed to have your waves correct, right? You didn't have no waves. Nobody was looking at you. You needed waves. You needed Nikes.
Oh,
there's
gosh.
certain key things. Elements. So then had the waves spinning, coming through the class, fresh sweater. And then everyone in my class is stressed out. I'm like, life is beautiful. Mm-hmm. Why y'all all stressed out? They're like, we have a test. And now I started to get stressed out because I didn't study. Mm-hmm. So, but for some reason, this one day, my professor comes at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's 8 o'clock and she didn't arrive to school. And she's like maybe 60 years old. Mm-hmm. 6 o'clock every morning. And for some reason, the first time in our 3-4 years, mm-hmm. she was late. So I grab my textbook. I start studying the whole chapter. And me and the rest of my classmates were stressed out, trying to memorize all our French notes and everything. The teacher comes like 5 minutes after the bell ring. By the time she gets there, I studied the whole chapter, memorized it. I was so confident. I've never like this exuberance of confidence in me that I was like, I'm going to get 100 on mm-hmm. this test. And then I slammed the textbook and it said Vive la France. And I was like, Vive la Bird! I just jumped up in my seat. Vive la Bird! And then everyone in the class is like, oh, Bernie lost it. Bernie lost it. And also everyone calls me Burns. Mm-hmm. My name is Bernie. So everyone just nicknamed me Burns. So it's just like, I was like, I just had so much confidence. I was just like, Vive la Bird! So then in my mind, I was just like, and then I got 100 on the test. And in my mind, I was like, if I carry that confidence in everything else in life, mm-hmm. I think I'll be good in life. If I could just have the confidence in myself. Because as a teenager, I lack confidence in mm-hmm. myself. So I was just like, yo, Bernie's a punk. But that guy, Vive la Burns, man, he's going to get it done.
So he's your like Sasha Fierce.
Yes.
I see. I mean, I feel like everybody has an alter ego. Probably all don't name them. I don't think I have a name for mine.
You have to.
But I need to.
Name it, get a wig for it, put it all together.
All right, cool. So that settles that. So now I know why. Because at first I was like, where does this name come from? So now I know.
Yes.
Now, recording artist.
Yeah.
What do you record?
Music.
What kind of music? What's the genre?
Right now it doesn't have a genre. Like I blend like hip hop, R&B, dancehall, like anything that I feel at the moment.
So you sing, you rap, what do you do?
I do both.
Oh.
I just started rapping publicly, at least. Let me say that publicly. I'm almost like Issa Rae, like in the mirror.
Okay,
so when I went to school, I wanted to do a sports radio show. I was telling you I was doing sports writing. Mm-hmm. So I did the sports radio show and I got to meet so many other talented creatives on my campus. And at the radio station, there was all this equipment. And I was like, oh my God, like this is equipment that people do not have access to, and mm-hmm. I'm so lucky to have access to it. So I'm learning about a radio board. I'm learning about how to do a proper show, being on the mic and all of that. And then I'm meeting all these artists and I always wrote songs as in high school, like we were rapping, freestyling, rap battle, all of that. And I was just like,
hey. Were you winning these rap battles though?
I never actually rap battle anybody because I was like, no, I'm way better. I'm like, this
you're
is
too
beneath
nice.
Me.
You're too nice.
No, I was like, no, this is beneath me. I'm a man of prestige. No rap battle, Grammys only. So, but what you call it? We always interested in that. So I always like wrote songs, but I did not have the tools to do anything with mm-hmm. them. So I tried it like on the whatever Windows at the time, whatever was in 2004 in high school. I tried it, but it was bad. Because it's just like, I didn't understand the elements of music, the mm-hmm. elements of technology. But now being around so many musical people, I was picking up stuff and I started to go to parties now. This is when I first started to go to parties too.
Okay.
And then I was just like, yo. And then I had like, so my voice was funny. When I first heard myself on the radio and the mic, I heard my voice for the first time. I'm like, this is interesting voice. It's like,
it's not what's popping in the streets.
It was a different voice. Like I had an English accent. I had like I have an interesting Haitian accent because mm-hmm. I don't know how to speak Creole properly. So
we're going to fix that, right?
Yes. I'm going to work on that. So I mix like, I'll speak English and Creole. So
Kringlish. You speak Kringlish.
I do, but my Creole does not sound like anyone else on this world.
Okay.
So it's just like, this is like a whole different thing. So when I'm listening to me just speak English, I was like, I have like a dual in my voice.
Okay.
And I'm just like, okay, but no one could tell if I'm Haitian.
I see.
So it's like, this guy's Caribbean, this, that. And then at 2009, this is when like the rhythms, the dancehall rhythms was popping. So all my friends at the parties that we DJed on campus or off campus, when they used to get the rhythms, you know, the stuff with Beanie Man, Vibe Cartel, the instrumental, if you downloaded the whole pack, the instrumental was there. So in my mindset at that time, I was like, yo, I'm just going to do the best of what I have. And at that time, the only one beats I had were dancehall beats. So I was like, yo, I'm going to be a dancehall artist. So I downloaded all those rhythms. My friend was a DJ. He's like, here, these go good with your voice. And then I sat down, I played them, I listened to them. And also at parties, I used to freestyle at parties because the music's loud, the room is dark, and whatever I'm saying, no one could really know if I'm following their music or not.
I see.
And at that time, I really couldn't understand what the Jamaican artists were saying. I couldn't understand.
I still don't understand.
No, now I get it. It's like the patois. Their patois is a whole different language.
Yeah, I still don't understand.
But at that time, I didn't know. So I thought I was saying their song. So when we used to go back to class next week, I'm singing the songs out loud, like in the cafeteria. And my friends are like, what are you saying? I'm like, that Vibe Cartel song. Like, please don't make me fiend. They're like, no, that's Cartel Don't Breed Me. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to make it a song just so I don't look dumb. And so that was like, that's what I was doing. So I bridge like dance hall and like R&B. This was way before Drake the Controller.
Okay.
So it was just like.
So you're the original Drake.
Huh?
You're the original Drake.
I don't want to compare myself to Drake, but it's just like, I understood what the power us Caribbeans had. And I was like, I saw what Sean Paul did, but I was just like, you can make that type of music and like for a mixture of Caribbean elements and like American elements.
Okay.
Because what I loved about Vibe Cartel, he's like Lil Wayne. He's the Jamaican Lil Wayne. That's exactly what he is.
Okay.
Lil Wayne come out with 100, not now, but back in the days, came out with like 100
before the scissor.
Yes. And then Vibe Cartel come out with on 100 rhythms. Like he just keeps going and very lyrical.
Okay.
So that was originally what I was doing. But after I graduated college, like I had to like reanalyze everything. Like after that post-college depression hits, and I just got to reanalyze myself as a man, as a human being, as an artist. And it's just like, instead of doing what's available to me, do what I want to do.
Okay. I think it's a good mantra.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's a recording artist. So now let's get back to this Haitian game night situation. Because when I went, I had a really good time.
Thank you.
I was going to say, because at first I was really intrigued because I'm like, are we going to play Vive Riviere? Are we playing Creek Crack? Like, what are we playing?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But then I got there and then I actually played this marble game that I don't remember the name.
Okay.
Something with an M.
I might be mispronouncing it wrong. It might be Makala. Yes, I know.
I need to look it up because it was the first time I ever was introduced to this game.
Yeah.
And I actually did pretty well. And I'm like, this is a pretty cool game.
Yeah.
But it was just the fact that I was able to, I didn't even know the girl who I was playing with, but it's like I met a new friend.
Yes.
And it was just a great vibe. And, you know, I played Jenga for the first time in like 15 years. Mm-hmm. And it was just a good vibe. And I liked the fact that there was, you know, Haitian music in the background. There was Pate for Sale. So I was like, this is really cool. So what gave you the idea to do such a thing?
Okay, so the Haitian game night was sort of not something I planned to do.
Okay.
So what we did at school was like we had a lot of administration blocks as students, like, you know, when you're trying to do events and stuff with bureaucracy. And so one of my friends is like, yo, let's do our own thing. We have no seniors, no juniors telling us anything, no faculty, you can't use the school logo. So we started doing our own parties while we were in school.
We just took
a small group of us. So that gave me the power of, if I have the resources, stop asking for permission. That's a lot of thing that holds us back in life. We're asking for permission. We're asking for raises. We're asking for like opportunities. When we have the knowledge and the experience, we might need the confidence, and it will take us more time. Like someone does grant you, you know, a job, an opportunity, a raise, that's way faster than you building it yourself. But at the end of the day, you need to stop asking permission. So when we did that, like my friend that got us all together to do our own parties, and it's just like, okay, that gave me the confidence of whenever I have a good idea, just do it. So with Haitian game night, I never planned it out. Like, I love being Haitian. I love Haitian people. I love Haitian culture. I love Haitian food. I love Haitian women. Like, I love everything about it. So that's like, and there's an overall, if you grew up in New York City as a Haitian, there's an overall problem in terms of, not a marketing problem, like a marketplace problem. So there's a lot of us Haitian American in New York City. We go to, I can't say Katra. Katra does a good job on Tuesdays. 4040, we're all over. Mm-hmm. Like the Zoes are in the building.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
But when you go to a party, whether it's a rooftop lounge or this club or this, that, they give you one, maybe for the 6 hours, one compa or Haitian song.
And that's after begging. And I agree with you because I am the individual who is consistently in the DJ's ear talking about, you're saying this is the Afrobeats. You're saying this is Caribbean.
Yeah.
Where is the Haitian music? And then after, like you said, after 6 hours, they play Aiti Bang Bang from Kalimi's first album.
Yeah.
Or they play Sweet Mickey, I Don't Care. And then they cut out the good part.
Yeah. So then now that I'm older, I have enough empathy and life experience to understand people from all aspects. So now that my friends are DJs and I've known them for 10 years and I met other DJs, I understand their psyche. Because since I was little, I want to understand why people do things. Mm-hmm. A lot of DJs, especially since the internet came out, they're scared to play new music if they don't know if it's going to work.
Yeah.
Some DJs have that courage, like, I'm playing this, that. But a lot of them want to be booked for their next gig or want to be remembered. And they, they're raised in a way of their introductory. It's just like, I'm going to be the opening, I don't know, it's B.B. King. Let's say B.B. King's, for example. The guy that opens is going to play conservative and leave everything up. Because he didn't get there being a maverick, a trailblazer.
Yeah.
It's almost like in the corporate world. It's just like, yeah, you want to do all these great things, but the way you came up here, the way you rose up the ranks was playing the good old boy game.
Yeah.
So when you get that senior executive and CEO, you've been doing it for 20 years. So how are you really going to, let's change it up?
Yeah.
Are you going to be like a soldier boy and just change the game up? So my understanding of that, I was like, okay. And a lot of the DJs are not Haitian themselves.
Yeah.
So I can't, as a patron, expect them to have it. Expect them to understand it. Expect them to deliver it well. Even though if you just look at the demographics, it's like there's a lot of us. If you give a Haitian person that doesn't expect the two songs at a party, we'll love you forever.
Listen, I've been very appreciative. Very appreciative when they, even though I'm, talking about this IET Bang Bang experience and how I'm like, guys, it's been like, it's 20 years now, maybe more than 20 years that song came out. There's so many different groups out there.
Yeah.
I still appreciate it. I think my problem though is when these DJs don't put compa on the flyer.
Yeah.
If you're not going to play compa. Like if I have to beg you to play compa and you're like, oh my gosh, this girl's here again, don't put compa on the flyer. And if you are going to put compa on the flyer, find a Haitian friend or two.
Yeah.
Listen, what parts do I play of this song? That's all you have to do. I feel like the DJs, though, especially in this climate, they got to step it up a little bit.
Okay. Yes, they do. But the problem, okay, now about DJs and certain things is the way the business is.
Okay.
Because us as patrons, we might not know the behind the business thing where the promoter or the event producer or the venue might put compa, but are they booking the DJs and scheduling them to DJ a party in unison?
Okay.
Where a flyer might have five DJs, but these might be five independent contractors where they're just, I'm here for an hour, this is what I'm doing.
Okay.
Where whoever's organizing the event has to have the communication and the business to be like, hey, this is what we're selling. This is what we're trying to deliver. This is what we're promoting, and this is what we're trying to deliver. Who's going to play the compa? Okay, we have out of the six DJs, we have two compa DJs. Is the compa DJ in the first and the end? Because if the people here from 11 to 3, they might not hear the guy at 4 a.m. Because
you know we're rolling up at 2.
Yeah. So it's just like, then you got to think about the lineup, this is like a whole separate thing, but I look at everything as product. Level one is product, whether it's a song, a party, or whatever it is, a brochure. Second is the business. So after everyone agrees upon the product, The business has to be agreed upon all parties.
Okay.
Then lastly is the marketing of, okay, we agreed what the product is. We agreed on the how we're going to split our profits. Now let's communicate to the people we want what we are doing.
Okay.
So not would and that's probably the issue you had. You saw Compa on this flyer. Mm-hmm. You expecting, you know, the jazz to flop it, like,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Don't put my and so I'm actually happy that you broke it down for me because now I have a better understanding. So now I'm placing blame on the events coordinator slash programmer.
Where the DJ that's there when you're there, he knows and that or that person knows and the organizers might know. This person doesn't specialize in that. And they set them up in a bad scenario.
I see. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's stop crucifying the DJs.
Yeah.
And let's start crucifying the event programmers.
Yeah.
We need to place the blame where it needs to go.
Whoever puts the paycheck out is that
That's the person. Because let me tell you, me and my friends, some of these DJs are like, these girls again. I'm like, it's on the flyer. You gotta play a song. So now I know who to send my grievances to. But that's interesting. I don't think we ever really thought about it. We're just we just think about the DJ's here and he's the one running the show.
The DJ's a lot of time, unless the DJ is the event producer, they are not running the show.
Okay.
It's almost like when you're at like Starbucks or any other place and you're complaining to the employee. It's like It's not their fault that there's no more croissants left. Like they weren't the person in charge of inventory.
Of stocking.
Yeah. Yelling at them might make you feel better, but it's really not their fault.
I understand. So DJs all over New York City, if you've ever felt my wrath, I apologize publicly on air.
Yeah. So I don't think there's a good communication of people understanding the behind the scenes of DJing. And me having the experience, like hanging out with my friends that are DJs, doing events with them, watching, just being a patron and other people booking them and seeing what worked, what didn't work. I'm like, if I was doing that, okay, I understand. So this is how Haitian Game Night came about.
Okay.
So me and Teddy's the co-founder of Haitian Game Night,
and
DJ Teddy Grahams.
Teddy Grahams, yes.
Yes. So we knew each other since we were little kids. My cousin lived in his building.
Okay.
So we were the only, we were the two young ones out of all the boys on the block that weren't allowed to play football. And all, because all the other guys were like 4 years older than us, 6 years older than us. And my mom put like rules like, don't let Benny outside. Don't let it. I was like, yo, and I was fat at the time. I'm like, yo, I'm bigger than most of the older guys. Even though I'm younger, I'm like, I'm as big as these guys. Let me play football with them. Like, no, so all the guys just knew me as like, oh, this is little cousin. He's on the side. Hold the water, please. And then like Teddy was my age too, or a year younger. So we were the young ones and we were just watching through the windows or watching on the side of the street. But we always saw each other in the neighborhood. And Teddy started DJing when I went to college. So we would always communicate. He would share me his work or whatnot. And so we saw each other a couple years ago and we just keep bumping each other in the train. I'm like, yo, Teddy, we're going to work together. I don't know on what, but we're going to work together. So, and I told him what I learned about life is more social. Life is social. Whether you're amazing, whether you're a fuck up, it's about who you know, the relationships you built. Like you could be the best person. If you did not foster those relationships, you will be a failure in life unless you like own everything. So, I was telling him, like, as we spoke, I was speaking to him more about marketing.
Okay.
Because I was just like a lot of my friends, a lot of people I know are the most talented. Like, do you see those DJing problems? None of my friends, even in college, they would have solved all of that. They would have made sure, hey, I don't know Compa, I'm not Haitian, but I would have 10 songs ready for this from their art. But it's just like a lot of people don't know that or not technicians of their crafts. So me and Teddy bumped into each other all the time and we kept talking, we kept talking. So I was like, yo, I told Teddy, I was like, yo, Teddy, I go to all these events in Brooklyn and there's no one that can play Compa. They don't play one Compa song. Like I'm in Williamsburg at all these events done with black people. But it's like, yo, nobody's catering to us. I was like, yo, Teddy, if you on a scene, if you get booked for one, and you and I'm like, Teddy DJs parties. Like, he DJs soca, dancehall, compa, hip-hop. And I was like, yo, if you busted a quick compa set, and I tell you, I'm at all these events. The Zoes are in the building.
We're everywhere.
So I was just like, yo, you would be a superstar in one summer. Like, I was like talking and it's like, yeah, I could make you a superstar in one summer. Like, I was just like, we just have to build the relationships mm-hmm. where it's just like, you can't just, oh, I'm a DJ and people want you, or oh, I'm this, people want
Yeah, because people are skeptical with the DJs, I'm telling you.
Yeah. So it's like, I was like, yo, let's go out every summer, build relationships. So we were doing that. And then I came across Instagram. I saw Laku Cafe and mm-hmm. I'm like, ooh, I personally love smoothies and crepes.
Yeah, me too.
I like,
that's my thing. Crepes. What type of crepes though?
I like the famous crepe, like, you know, with the Nutella, yes, banana, yes, strawberry.
Yes, you're speaking my language.
Whenever I'm in LES, there's this place called Creperie.
I think I've been there.
Like,
I've been there. And then there's one in Williamsburg too. There's a good one in Williamsburg.
Yeah. Anytime I'm there, I'm like, I try to find a reason to get a crepe. So I was like, damn, but I don't want to go to the city to get a good crepe. And I saw Laku, and I'm like, they had crepes and smoothies. I was like, you talking my language. So I went one time after work. I was like, okay, I love the vibe. I spoke to Kasan, the owner. Mm-hmm. I love the design, the decor. And I was like, oh my God, I think this is it. And then, but I saw they had a game night and I went there and she was telling me, like, they did it once, but they didn't have it organized. And mm-hmm. I was like, hey, I've been doing events for 10 years. Like, let's talk about this. And then she was like, I sent her an email. She was down with it. Mm-hmm. And then I told, so now I'm like, okay, I'm sitting at home and I was like, okay, we're going to do this game night, Teddy, but it's got to be something that touches people's soul. And I hit him up. I was like, it's going to be called Haitian Game Night. And from my experience, when you're selling people things, whether it's politics, products, people buy based on emotions mm-hmm. and feelings. So I was like, whatever we do has to be polarizing. Whether it's polarizing good or polarizing bad, it has to be polarizing. And I was like, Haitian Game Night, that's polarizing enough. Like, we have a lot of history mm-hmm. in Haiti, in America. Recently, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, Haitian Game Night, I'm like, we'll be polarizing. And I was like, yo, leave all the marketing stuff to me. I have it, like the flyer design, this, that. Like, I know who to get. And I know the idea mm-hmm. to attract people.
I mean, you got me.
Oh. And like, when I saw you, I was like, because a lot of times, like, I talk stuff and I'm confident in myself, but I don't know it's going to work until it works. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know how we got these people, but I'm glad they came.
I'm telling you, I think I saw the first one you did, and then mm-hmm. like something happened, I couldn't come, and I saw the second, I was like, Haitian Game Night. It kept ringing in my head, and I was home, mm-hmm. comfortable, okay, like not leaving the house.
Yeah.
And one of my friends called, and he was like, yo, you want to hang out? I'm like, this is Haitian Game Night thing. Yeah. You want to come with me? Yeah. And that's how we ended up going there, and I was just like, this is amazing.
Yeah, so from my experience of doing events, first, I already knew the event. I was like, if anyone walks in the door, I got you. Because mm-hmm. one thing I do sell is comfort. Because when me and my friends did parties, I was like, I always ask people, why'd you come to our party? There's so mm-hmm. many parties in New York City. It's just like, oh, they really liked it. Like, so I always, especially the women, I always ask like, why, mm-hmm. why'd you come here? And then I observe people, and like a lot of people feel comfortable, like, hey, we had a great, first you played the music we liked. It was a great vibe. You guys mm-hmm. have great positive energy. The guys weren't really hounding us.
Yes, we don't want that.
On guys hounding you, it's the promoter.
Okay. You see these Jules people? This is what it is. Because I'm like, there's certain parties, I'm just like, I am not even stepping foot because I already know.
Okay, so if a flyer says ladies at a discounted price than men, if you enter that party, you will be, you're a commodity. You are just like Facebook. Product. You are the product. Mercy. The women are the product.
Mercy.
So if something is ladies free until this or ladies discounted, you are the product. So know, as a guy, let me tell you as a guy perspective.
Please.
If I see you have to pay $30 more, $50 more than a woman, I'd be like, yo, the girls there better be bad because yo, y'all taking more money out of me just because I'm a guy. Mm-hmm. So it's just like already before I entered the door, the atmosphere is more tense. So when you interact with men, they're going to be more aggressive.
There's a psychology behind everything.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love studying people. I don't have a psychology degree, but I study.
You're an amateur certified psychologist.
Yes.
I'm giving that to you.
Thank you. So in the events I do not want to. Oh, two things. I don't want to place the women above the men. I want an equal platform. Mm-hmm. But I do want everyone to be comfortable.
Okay.
So whether it's the ratio is more women or more guys is not intimidating.
Okay.
So that is something that I've noticed at events I've been to, events I've done. I'm like, this is a very important factor. Mm-hmm. So one thing I do in events I do is sell comfort.
Okay.
So if you decided to leave your house, yeah, I knew you was warm and snuggy.
Let me tell you.
But there will be games. There will be food. There was video games too. There was nice, cool people. There's drinks.
There was giveaways. I got one of the giveaways.
Oh, yes. There was body butter giveaways.
Yes, I got a body butter.
So there was cool people to talk to. If you didn't want to talk to anybody, it was cool. If you wanted to be social, it was cool. There was no feeling like I was trying to do my best to speak to new people and mm-hmm. not make them feel like, hey, I don't really know. I'm awkward. Like, I've been there. I've gone to events also. I always try to greet every single person that works in the door because if you keep advertising your event and I actually showed up and no one said hi to me, mm-hmm. I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
I'm like, this wasn't a party with 400 people. Like, if you spent all that time in marketing and whatnot and I actually showed up, where a lot of people don't focus on retention.
Mm.
They're so focused on getting people that either, that's maybe interested or clearly shows no interest and get in their own ego.
Yeah.
And I used to be like that, like especially when I first started music, first started doing events. Oh man, this person I knew for 10 years didn't really come to my event, didn't come to this. But then I had to mature and it's like they don't owe me anything.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that's not their obligation.
Yeah.
So that is something when we did like Haitian Game Night, we talked about. Like to make a comfortable environment. And then I was like, okay, me and Teddy talked about the music. It's like, we can't give them straight compa in the sense. We got to balance it out. So whether you're Haitian or whether you're not Haitian, it's like, this is not like your cousin's bal or
communion.
Yeah. So it's just like more than half of the people at Haitian Game Night are not Haitian, which I love about mm-hmm. it. It's like, they're really interested. Like, okay, this is not like the 80s where everyone's bashing Haitians.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where 20 years or 30 years after black people or don't have this negative stereotypes.
Yeah.
They're not prevalent, but they don't have a stereotype. We have to narrate our own stories as Haitian Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, hey, what's this music about? What's this about? And I always said, like, okay, at first, when gentrification was happening, I was a little mad about it just for the fact that the neighborhood was getting better when white people were coming.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I'm older and understanding business and money, it's just like, yo, you put out a good money, you put something that can make money, things will happen faster. So I was just like, yo, our Haitian culture, we should have our mom and pop stores and stuff for the hardcore Haitians mm-hmm. and only Creole speaking. But we should have something. If you're not Haitian, you could come, be comfortable, give us your money.
Yeah. So that's what it's about.
That's what it's about. Like, there's some places, like whether it's an Italian restaurant that, hey, yo, this feel like the Godfather's here. I don't feel comfortable here. But there's some Italian places like, you know what? I'm going to come here, get us a spaghetti, this, mm-hmm. that, risotto. Let's go. Let's get it popping. get me some Moscato. Let's go. So it's just like, we need to have both of those places.
Yeah, like a balance. Yeah, no. Well, I'm really happy that you guys started that because I'm like, I always love a good game night. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it's a Haitian game night, I felt like, I mean, I always welcome an opportunity to listen to compa outside of my bedroom.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
And there's not too many opportunities for that in New York City. And it's crazy because there's so many Haitians here.
Yeah.
You would think that like I would just have to like start declining compa offers, you know, but it's like I'm literally like, where can I get some compa? So I really appreciate it. So now mm-hmm. when's the next Haitian game night?
The next Haitian game night is February 22nd.
Okay.
Yeah, at Laku Cafe. That's in Crown Heights, Utica.
Okay, cool. All right. Now before we I guess get to the end of the show, mm-hmm. what is your favorite game?
Okay, the game I'm best at is Connect Four.
Okay. Mama know the game you best at.
Okay.
I said the game. What game do you like the most?
Okay, dominoes. Dominoes.
Okay.
Dominoes.
Now, what is your level of proficiency in the dominoes?
I am deadly good.
I
am deadly good.
Okay.
I'm not a big slapper on the table.
Oh, you don't do all the theatrics?
Unless my friends are playing, because we're always talking shit. But it's just like, dominoes is like, it's a good strategical game. If all four people know how to play, And we
then
don't,
it's good. Yeah.
We don't play, me and my friends, we don't play the traditional, like, Caribbean way.
Okay.
So we don't play teams. It's every man for themselves. The person with the most dominoes is the loser. So mm-hmm. if there's a next, they have to get up. If there's no next, they have to do the push-ups.
I've seen that before. Yes. I've seen that before. I've not been a victim, but I have seen it.
So, dominoes. Connect Four, I'm nasty at.
You know, I used to be good at Connect Four when I was a kid. But as I've gotten older, I realize I haven't really had opportunities to play these games too, which is why I was so excited to play Jenga. Like, once I got to the Jenga table, I never left.
Jenga's so scary. I'm just like, no, don't bring it down.
I almost caught 3 heart attacks during the Jenga game. But I was just like, oh my God, like, when do you play Jenga? You know what I mean? Like, when do you play these games? So I was just like, this is great.
Yeah.
So it's like on a monthly scale? Or?
Yeah, it's a monthly scale. We don't have a set schedule because we do things by flow.
Yeah.
Just feel it out. It's an after work vibe, 7 to 11. People come through and then... Me and Teddy, we actually adapt to the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
So every Haitian game night, so we come up with a set plan on how we're going to play the music or whatnot. So like one Haitian game night, I think the first one we start off with R&B,
mm-hmm.
but nobody's there when it first starts off. So I was like, yo, we got to start off with R&B, play it smooth.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it hits like after the first hour, like, oh, let's give them a light compa, something light. But then when we started doing that, the first one we did that, and nobody was there until 9 o'clock. So the first 2 hours, there's only 3 people.
Mm.
So I went up to Teddy. I was like, everything you did for the first 2 hours didn't exist. And then me working with other DJs, I know how to communicate better with
mm-hmm.
DJs. I'm not trying to be all over Teddy's shoulder. Play this, play that.
This one.
Like, that's annoying. Like, imagine someone at your job over your shoulder. File this, do this, send this. Like, that's mm-hmm. annoying. So overall, it's like, we'll talk. Like, anyone that works with DJs, like, maybe every half hour, I talk about feel and energy.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the first one had less people. But it was a really rambunctious crowd.
Okay.
So it was just like, okay, we got to hit them show.
Mm-hmm.
Get them. They want it.
Let me tell you, you have to, for me,
I'm
not into this, you know, ease me in business. I want the headbangers from the moment I walk into the door. I want to hear Class. I want to hear Jackwood. I want to hear all of them. Like,
but it depends
back-to-back.
On the crowd.
That's the thing.
So the second, the one that you came out, that was Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
That one was one of our highest turnouts. But it, in terms of energy, it wasn't like as frisky.
Yeah.
So it was just like me and Teddy, like we played compop maybe 40 minutes longer than we wanted to.
Because
we wanted to go to Soca. But I was like, yo, we cannot leave this without people dancing to compop.
Yeah.
So I was just, but that one had besides me and Teddy, I don't think there was any other Haitian American men.
Yeah, the guys that I was talking to, I think they were all, because I surveyed and asked them, and they were just like, no, I think a couple of them were American.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm like, okay.
So that one I had to like do more work as a host and like, hey, let's dance.
I did see some of them. They got up, they did.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they were doing, but it was cool.
Yeah.
It was a good time. Okay. So Teddy.
Yeah.
So Viva.
Yes.
Bernie.
Yes.
Tell us, how can we, well, 2 things.
Yeah.
How can we get in contact with you? Like, what's your social media profiles? And 2, like, where can we find this music of yours?
Okay. So I'm on everywhere. Viva LaBurns. That's V-I-V-A-L-A-B-U-R-N-S. V-I-V-A-L-A-B-U-R-N-S. My music's on Spotify. Viva LaBurns.
Spotify.
So yes.
Okay.
Apple Music.
Okay.
The title.
Apple. Okay.
Me and Jay-Z.
Oh, title as well. Oh, so you're everywhere.
Yes.
Oh, as soon as I get home, I'm looking you up.
Yes. I came out with Sweater Season.
Okay.
I'm always wearing sweaters.
I did see that on your Instagram. I was like, is this a podcast? What is this?
No, okay. It's my second solo project.
Interesting.
Yes.
I will be all
I'm
going
to actually give you a physical copy right now.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Definitely. All right. So this was a good show.
Yes.
I think we definitely got some jewels from this too. Like, I have this whole business aspect now, like, painted in front of me.
Yeah, yeah. So like, I try to learn from everything. Good and bad, I try to learn from everything. Like, I was just watching about the Donald Trump campaign.
Mm.
Marketing-wise, I thought it was a great campaign. Even though socially, there's a lot of social damage that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of, I don't know what it's called, mudslinging or dirty politics. Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to call it. In terms... Like, I don't know if you mind if I talk about Donald Trump for a second.
I mean, you can talk about Donald, but not too much, because I don't want to give him too much time.
So me and my aunt was talking about the next presidential election.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, I think he's going to win again. And my aunt was like, why you say that? He's doing all these bad things. I was like, it's not about the bad things. what people are not understanding about him and Roger Stone and his whole set is that they understand how to use social media. For if Donald Trump was applying to Indeed, you have to give him social media marketing manager.
Yeah.
Like, you would have to. Hillary didn't understand that the way she communicated worked really well in 1990.
I don't even think she's not a tweeter like Donald.
Yes, but where are most people getting their information from?
I mean,
Twitter
from
and
Twitter.
Instagram.
Yeah.
So you gotta be popping on
That's
the gram.
That's true.
Like, what I liked about Obama, people like, Obama was the first GoFundMe.
Mm-hmm.
This is what people not understanding.
Yeah.
So that 2008 election, he raised a lot of money based on like, yo, we could use PayPal. He understood
he used the
technology.
Resources, yeah.
So it's not about the actual politics. It's about communicating your message efficiently.
And effectively, yeah.
Whereas like Donald Trump made you good or bad, he got your attention.
That is true, unfortunately. And I mean, we're talking about him here.
And unfortunately, whether like morality or not, that's how you get people's attention. So there's something I call... a lot of companies are doing it in terms of marketing. I call it black rage marketing.
Okay.
So all of these racist things that you're seeing are intentional.
Okay.
Whether it's H&M with the monkey shirt.
I felt like there was an agenda there.
So like I work in media. So let me tell you how it's done. Like I already knew this, but now that I work in media.
Mm-hmm.
So let me tell you. So when we look at our YouTube videos and look at our stats, we look at the numbers. Okay, like last week, the work I did, we had 1 million views on our YouTube channel, right? For the media company I worked for. And then it's just like, okay, we didn't look at, the comments were positive, the comments were negative. We looked at, we had 1 million views, and when we charge ads for these commercials or these things running on the videos, we could charge people more money. Whether it was, we love that video, or man, we hate what you were talking about. That was never in the boardroom, never in the meeting room. Nobody cares. They care about the total number of clicks and then flipping that to make ad money. That is the complete game. Whether you're on Instagram with hair products, whether you're on a media corporate media company, that is the game. So when we're all bashing H&M, or my favorite, there's two white women that knows how to get Tommy Lohman.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
So
another troll.
Tommy Lohman and Lohman and Rachel Dazzle. She has a Netflix show. To have a Netflix show.
Oh, Dozal,
show,
right? Yeah.
I love mispronouncing people's name. I don't care about. So the thing about it, every time you retweet them or correct their infactual stuff, you're boosting them. So if you care about blocking this, the best thing to do is block these people and tell your friends, block this person.
So the whole going at them and commenting and tearing them down actually boosts them up.
Boost them up. Unless you do it privately where nobody can see, because at the end of the day, Twitter is metrics. They're going to look like you cursing out Tommy Lauren for saying, or Donald Trump is saying Haitians are shithole or whatever. At the end of the day, Twitter's just going to see numbers. Look at this interactions. Anytime he tweets, he gets 1 million people replying.
Yeah.
They're not going to. So now next time he tweets about his next insult, which will be placed in a product marketing where there'll be a product placement right next to this insult. Like, Arby's got the best this, that. It's like, that's all the people care about because people care about their dollar. So if you want to stop these racist attacks online, ignore
stop
the person.
Stop responding. All right. See, I'm telling you, I keep learning new things from you.
So just block. Yeah, stop responding, but also block them.
Okay.
First, emotionally, psychologically, seeing that is not good. Like a couple years ago with all the videos of police killing black people, that hurt. Like when I see that, I'm saddened.
Yeah.
Like, so block those things. Yes. When you see them, don't reply and argue. Arguing is a waste of time. You're not winning unless that's what you do for a living.
I mean, if that's your job, yeah. But if you're just like a regular person like me.
Yeah.
All right, I see.
If you get money based on views, argue with someone popular.
Okay.
Like if you are the black person on MSNBC, do it. That's make more money. Get the ad.
Yeah.
Like us black people, we need to be looking at ad money.
I see.
Saying we're not marketable. Excuse me.
All right. Oh, we could definitely go on forever and ever. Yes. But I definitely want to bring you back to talk about this, though, because I feel like this understanding this concept of social media ads and advertising marketing is really important, because we have so many, you know, startups coming up within our community, but we just don't know like how to really effectively market and do all this stuff. So I definitely want to bring you back on for that.
Yeah.
But guys, it is, the hour is late.
Yes.
And I have to give this last word from our sponsors. Trendy Tripping is a co-retailing space that allows artists, entrepreneurs, and startups the opportunity to showcase and sell their products without the risk of renting their own retail space. So definitely, guys, follow Trendy Market, Trendy Tripping on social media for whatever co-retailing needs that you may have. And it's a wrap for our episode. Thank you so much, Viva La Burns.
Thank you for having me. This show's amazing. Yele, we out.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern.